And away we go. It's a Monday morning, Monday, April the 6th, 2020, 15 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride, and we have got a program today that hopefully will educate and inform you in many ways in regard to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic that we are all involved with at this particular point. And hopefully, in some way, educate you on our local health facilities at this point as well. Now, hour number two today, from 9:10 until 10 a.m., we're going to be joined by Brian Zwanda. Brian Zwanda is an Ohio man who has contracted COVID-19, been in the hospital with it, and been released. And we are going to talk with him about what his symptoms were, what it was like to be in the hospital, and what the recovery has been like. And everybody out there in the listening audience should take heed of what Brian has to say as we head into what we are told will be the worst 3 weeks of this particular illness. So Brian Zwanda coming up, firsthand account of being stricken with COVID-19 from 9:10 until 10 a.m. Now this morning, in hour number one, we're joined by a gentleman that I hope, he has not been on the show before, but I hope will be a regular visitor to the program. We've had the Marion Public Health Commissioner, Tracy Kinsler, on many times. We've had Mayor Scott Schertzer, Sheriff Tim Bailey, Prosecutor Ray Grogan, and a myriad of doctors on over the past few weeks that we've all been dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. But today we are joined very happily by the Chief Operating Officer of Ohio Health Marion General Hospital, Dr. Curtis Gingrich. Dr. Gingrich, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the program.
Thank you for coming on, Dr. Gingrich. Here we are in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. We keep hearing from all of the politicians, the governor, the president, and even some doctors that this three-week period is going to be the worst. What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think that with the modeling that is being done, with the ways in which the governor and Dr. Acton have really increased the awareness of the need for social distancing and staying at home orders, it has helped us and bought us some time to really manage our planning and preparation. And I believe that in that modeling, it looks like we are beginning to head into what will be our surge in both this community and in Ohio. And it looks like, at least at this point, and we continue to move those models on a weekly basis, but looks like we are really close to that line that we need to be to have blunted the curve enough to not overwhelm the health systems in Ohio.
Dr. Gingrich, we hear a lot of words like surge and increase. Here in Marion, what might that look like, number-wise? I know we don't have an exact number, but what might that look like at the height?
Yeah, thank you. I think that for us, what we've been planning and working on both here at Marion General and within the Ohio Health System is identifying hurdles or markers where we would adjust our care in our hospitals. And so in our surge planning for here in Marion, we have followed the recommendations of the governor and Dr. Acton to look to double our capacity. So we are working with nearby hospitals and here to increase the number of critical care beds if needed. Right now we have 15 critical care beds, but looking to double that and then even have extra if needed, if we needed to move down another path based on what we would find in surge numbers, and then also be able to find a way to safely take care of the patients that come in for non-COVID related issues. Mm.
What mindset do you have to be in to get ready for something like this that we've never faced before?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have worked really hard prior to this, working in our Central Ohio Trauma System, so our health region, if you will, which is Region 4 for the state of Ohio, and conducting exercise around mass casualties, different drills for emergencies. And so that preparation has helped us to develop an infrastructure that allows us to then adapt and adjust when needed. So the time we've had to plan over these last 3 weeks, we've used that information and that structure to set up an incident command center to coordinate that care with the state and within our system as well, and then be able to find teams on our here at Marion General to be able to help us manage both the planning, the staffing, and the organizing of logistics and operations. So really have been prepared not for something of such a long duration. Normally our mass casualty drills are more finite in time, but has really set us up well to be able to put us into a mindset of running an incident command center and moving in an emergency type situation.
Now, anybody who has driven by Marion General Hospital in the past few days has noticed that we have started to see triage tents being set up. What are those for, and how will that come into play when this hits its height?
Yeah, thank you for asking. That's a place, what we've done is placed two tents in front of the emergency department. We're not using them currently, but we've gotten the logistics set up, the computers, the things that we need to help us manage patients there. But the goal will be, as we move down a path, we're planning that if we have an increased number of patients, we will be able to triage and separate out those patients with respiratory type illness and those that do not, treat the lower acuity patients in those tents, and then those that have higher acuity or those respiratory symptoms, we can manage them and help to take off the pressure in the emergency department to be able to manage patients in a slightly different way. It really helps us to expand that triage process for a higher number of patients that would come through than we normally see here at Marion General.
It's my understanding from reporting and from talking with Tracy Kinsler on air, Marion Public Health Commissioner, that there are people in Marion General Hospital right now that are recovering from this illness. Is that difficult to see at this point? Is the staff worried about that? What's been the feeling there?
Yeah, I would say as we move down the path of where we were 3 weeks ago to now, I'm incredibly humbled and proud of the staff and the way that they've responded. There's always that anxiety that occurs, especially as we did the measures to create capacity by stopping elective surgeries, by doing our protective equipment preservation models that we did, of getting that message out and helping people to be focused on the task at hand. And the team has responded extremely well, being very innovative and creative and stepping in. I would say that at this point, as the health department is that source of information for the number of patients we have in the community, and seeing that in the newspapers and elsewhere, we are coordinating very well with them, and at this point, anticipating the ability to serve the community in a very positive way and inside a really stressful situation.
We keep hearing that the contagious nature of this illness is one of the terrible parts of it. When somebody comes into the hospital and may even feel like they have it, might have the symptoms, how are they kept away from other people and kept away from the people who are working at the hospital at this point?
Yeah, we have done several things to really help protect our associates who are working here and to help care for the patients as well. So at this point, patients who are coming into the emergency department are given a mask while they're assessed, because we see a prevalence now in the state and in our community that is high enough to certainly warrant that. And the mask is really to help prevent droplet spread from the patient if they were positive. So we start that at the point they enter into our facility. All associates are now wearing masks, again, for the same reason, because of that spread, especially in any asymptomatic period, to have that mask on when they're traveling around in the hallways and taking care of patients. We have that piece of protection in place. And then from there, they're assessed. If they show up as being what we identify as a person under investigation, or they have a risk of being positive for the COVID-19 virus, we then have a cohorted unit at this point where they go. We've increased our testing capabilities to be able to, within usually less than a day now, be able to get a result back for patients in the hospital. It helps us to manage that care and then be able to move them into other areas of the hospital if they are negative. If they're positive, they're kept there, and we follow all of the guidelines established by the hospital here, Ohio Health, and the CDC to manage them using the right protective equipment.
We keep hearing that there are not enough tests. In Marion, at this point, there's been a lot of discussion about this on social media and other places. Do we have a sufficient amount of tests for what we might see in the next few weeks?
Yeah, it's a really great question as well, and something we monitor on a daily basis. 2 to 3 weeks ago, I would say we were at a shortage to be able to add ambulatory testing. So at Marion General, we have set up a assessment center over on Barks Road by the post office, and at one of our ambulatory, not a clinical site, but another site where associates work. And we had to wait until we had enough supply to be able to open that up, and we've now been open for several days now, testing about 40 patients a day. We do not feel the testing supply is appropriate and enough and solid enough to be able to have a walk-in type assessment center, but by individuals who are experiencing symptoms calling their primary care physician, they can connect into a COVID clinical team that will work through the algorithm, and if they meet the criteria for being tested, their information is placed in the computer and they can then go to that site and at that site be able to be tested. So we're seeing an increasing amount of testing availability. We've added rapid testing in-house in our reference lab that is housed at Riverside Methodist Hospital. And so those are for inpatients who we get the test back more quickly, so we can use that as a preservation of PPE and also be able to more rapidly determine if they need to stay in that cohorted unit or can move to other parts of our facility. So at this point, the supply chains have opened up enough where we feel confident that we can test all those that need to come into the hospital and continue to do targeted testing for those who are experiencing symptoms within the community after discussion with their primary care physician.
If you are recommended by your primary care physician to take this test, can you tell us what the test is, what exactly happens, and how long does it take to diagnose COVID-19?
Yeah, so that is also rapidly changing, but at this point, the assessment that we have, especially at our assessment site here in Marion, is that you drive up in your car, you would show your ID, your driver's license, that would, and date of birth, that would link you into a number that was already placed into the system. They would then, you would not have to leave your car. They would do either a nasopharyngeal swab, so a small swab that would go into the nose to collect secretions in the back of the nose and the oropharynx, or an oropharyngeal swab, similar to what a strep test might be like in your doctor's office. And we're using some combination of those based on what supply we have. That information would then go and be tested. That is taking somewhere between 24 and 48 hours at this point, so markedly improved from where we were at the beginning. And at that point, you would be asked to self-quarantine, to stay at home, and the results would then come back, go back to your primary care physician's office who helped to set up the test, and they would be able to discuss with you then the results of that test.
Dr. Gingrich, we hear a lot about PPE. We're talking disposable gowns, non-sterile gloves, surgical masks, N95 masks, hand sanitizer. Where are we at this point in regard to that? Is that getting any better, any worse? I know we were asking for donations at one point.
Yes, thank you. The donations have been incredible. We're sharing those and working with Sarah McNamee from our emergency management agency here in Marion County to be able to make sure the first responders have adequate supplies as well. And we continue to monitor that on a twice-a-day basis where we see how our supply chain is doing for personal protective equipment. At this point, we are in an appropriate level, in both with our current rate of usage and what we anticipate moving forward. We continue to receive supplies in through our supply chain, and so feel at this point optimistic that we are going to be able to move through this with the right personal protective equipment. Really, a lot of that's related to the donations that we've received, related to the supply chain management that we've had, and also related to those preservation measures that we've done in terms of limiting elective procedures and elective surgeries, which allows us to maintain those gowns and face shields and equipment. And then also with the process we put in place for our staff as they care for those patients, as we follow the CDC guidelines.
Here in Marion, it's been interesting to a certain degree because with this pandemic, a lot of panic has come along as well. Now, in Marion at this point, we have not, to my knowledge, had a death from COVID-19. Is this just inevitable that this will happen at some point?
Yeah, the anxiety is palpable at times, and when you see the stories of other countries and certainly in other parts of the United States, like Michigan, like New York City, Louisiana, it can provoke a lot of anxiety. I think that what we're seeing and believing is that this is a real issue. This virus has potential to create a very prolonged course of care, and most of that care is supportive in trying to allow the body to recover. Those who are older or have other, especially respiratory illnesses and chronic disease, have a higher risk, and so I do believe that we will see individuals that unfortunately do not recover from this. But the thing that it to me gives me that hope and optimism is that 80% of individuals that do experience an infection with COVID-19 do make a recovery, and that's the piece that we continue to work then for those other individuals to be able to support them and get them through this illness using the best care and technology that we have at the time.
Just speaking to the panic part of this, because it has been a huge component, I remember when the first case was diagnosed in Marion. That was a huge, huge story that day. It was a huge happening on social media. It got people very worried. When that first death happens, unfortunately, is there a fear of the fear that will come with that?
I think that the work that Tracy Kinsler has been doing in the health department to keep people informed, the work that we've been doing within the state of Ohio, should help us to feel comfortable as much as possible, knowing that this vacillates, as the human condition places us in a place of seeing that information, being concerned. I think what helps is going back to the things that we can control, and that is maintaining our social distance, washing our hands well, identifying if we have symptoms and connecting with your physician to determine if it's getting worse, especially with symptoms of worsening cough or shortness of breath, to seek medical attention at that time. Those are the things that we can control, and by having that sense of control will help us to be able to weather this storm.
I believe it was about 10 days ago we had Tracy Kinsler on the show, and we keep hearing all around the country that respirators are a big issue with this particular disease. And when I was talking with Tracy, I had asked, do we have a sufficient amount of respirators for this area? And she said, no, for the spike in it. And I said, well, will we have enough by the time the spike happens? And she didn't think so. Is this a worry? Is this a problem at this point?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question and something that we continue to monitor on a regular basis as well as we plan. So we have the appropriate number of ventilators at this point for the number of rooms that we have to take care of patients, and we have enough ventilators here at Marion General when we look at resources within the community to manage two levels of our surge. So that gets us a double amount of critical care beds that we have now where you would manage patients on ventilators. We also are working within the system of Ohio Health and within that Region 4 Central Ohio trauma system on a daily basis to report into the governor's office through the Ohio Hospital Association the number of ventilators that we have, the number of ventilators that are in use. And as we determine where hotspots might be, being able to collaborate and utilize those most effectively. So this time that we've had to plan and what looks like in the modeling that we've bent the curve, if you will, to stay under that overwhelming stress on the healthcare system, we're optimistic that we're close to that number if that modeling is correct. So we continue to look at that every day. But this period of time that we've had has really helped not just Marion General and not just Ohio Health, but has allowed the state to be able to understand its resources and structure that differently. So I am optimistic that we're in a good place for the majority of what we need, and we continue to monitor that and look for other resources as we move down this next 2 or 3 weeks.
As a doctor, as a physician, did you ever think you would have to have this type of conversation with anybody?
That's a really interesting question. I'm a family doctor by training, and after about 8 years in private practice in Indiana, I came back to teach at a residency program where we train family medicine residents. And one of the lectures I always gave was on the epidemiology of influenza. And so I spoke about that in the early 2000s, saying we're off by about 10 years of when the next kind of epidemic should occur. And we had minor periods where we had some new viruses come in, like swine flu or SARS. And so we had little periods of that, but we didn't see this larger pandemic. And so it's at that point, I was on the clinical side. Now, being on the operational side and helping to run the hospital, my view is much more in tune with the logistics behind the scene of how to manage that and supporting our teams and our physicians as they provide the care. But it reminds me of those times when I talked about how these viruses can develop and change that increases that risk to our country and to the world, in fact. So it brings back some of those memories. But what I've experienced and watched in Marion, the community, the support that's there, the way in which I see people following the recommendations to stay home, shelter in place, manage their social distancing and hand washing, and the way I've seen the teams come together with a lot of innovation and creativity, it, one, makes me really proud, and it makes me very hopeful as we weather through this. We're going to see some strong heroes come out of this and some really good ideas that we're going to be able to bring forward into healthcare once we get through this time.
People have used words, we see them on television, we see them in press conferences, dark time, this is not going to be good, but we're going to get through it on the other side. What kind of decisions have been prepared to be made for the absolute worst of this illness?
We have worked closely with the emergency management agency here in the county, with the health department, with other public officials, with our Marion General Hospital Board, to help prepare to make sure that we're here to be able to provide the highest level of care for this community. And I'm optimistic and truly believe that we will move through this and from this learn a lot of new things on how we provide better care. When I look at how quickly we've been able to set up things like telehealth visits and video visits for patients, things that are going to help us in the future for healthcare, depending on what happens with some of those regulations that have been relaxed to allow that as they get modified once we move into a more normal circumstance. I think that we are prepared as best we can for what we anticipate to come. We've created the structure to be flexible and nimble to make changes as necessary, and then to really learn from that so we can provide even better health care on the other side of this crisis.
When should people call their primary care physician to see if this is something they might have? What do the symptoms look like?
Yeah, so the most common symptoms, and you'll read a lot of information out there about how there can be variation, but the most common symptoms are a persistent dry cough and a fever. Those symptoms don't always go exactly together at the same time, but over a period of time, a few days, those symptoms can occur. There can be other symptoms as well, some body aches. But the point at which the symptoms are persisting for several days, normally that will take 5 to 7 days and then tend to start to recover. But if they're persisting longer than that, or especially if the individual is beginning to feel more short of breath, those are the times that that connection into the primary care physician is really important, because that's where the medical assessment can occur to determine if there's a need for more increased medical care or assessment. I mean, that's where I would recommend that. I would say that those high-risk individuals, those older than, I usually use the age of 65, you'll see some say 60, some say 70, but somewhere in that 60 to 65 range, especially if they have underlying lung conditions, may want to contact their primary care physician earlier in that course just to let them know they're experiencing symptoms so they can make a determination if indeed they meet the criteria then for assessment for COVID testing. And also then if that becomes negative, there may be some other underlying issue that would need to be dealt with. That would be the recommendations that I would recommend, and I see that being recommended by the CDC and their guidelines as well.
You know, obviously, not being able to breathe is a terrible part of this illness, and that's why ventilators come into play, and obviously not being able to breathe is the symptom. But medically, what causes that with this illness? What is going on inside the body?
Yeah, so it's creating a type of pneumonia in the lung tissue that impacts that ability of the lungs to get oxygen in and then into the bloodstream. So that's the process that's occurring. Usually it's described as what's called an interstitial pneumonia, or a pneumonia in the areas around the air sacs of the lung. And that's what then causes that difficulty with breathing that occurs.
Mm. A lot of people are still out in the community, still going to the bank, still going to the grocery store, still going out and eating. If you don't have this, what is the best way to avoid it if you have to go out?
Yeah, I think if you have to go out, and I would just still really encourage an increased emphasis on staying at home, if at all possible, especially in these next 2 or 3 weeks. But if you do need to go out, and when you need to go out to get groceries, for example, or get to a pharmacy to get medications, practicing appropriate social distancing, staying more than 6 feet apart, is a really important barrier. When you think about a cough and the droplets, the studies are showing that 6 feet distance helps to minimize, especially in an open space, the spread of the virus. The other components are significant attention to hand washing for at least 20 seconds to really wash off any potential germs or viruses that you've gotten on your skin. It has just now been recommended by the CDC to consider wearing a mask when in public. It does not have to be an N95 mask, and in fact, I think that the use of some of those that people have been able to purchase or purchased in other ways can sometimes create a sense of confidence that I'm not going to get sick, but yet that front of that mask should be considered contaminated at some point. So touching that can create challenges. So what I would recommend is some form of a barrier, and you see a lot of places that are using cloth-made masks. They are not as good at preventing the spread as a different mask, but they can be very helpful in public and with appropriate social distancing. Again, not to keep you from getting ill, but if you are sick, from spreading that virus out and having those droplets get out and the risk of spreading it to others. So those are the things that I certainly recommend, along with then the other pieces, just not touching the face, because this virus enters through the eyes, the nose, and the mouth. And so preventing that touching the face, especially when you're out in public, before you have time to wash your hands, is a really important piece to remember as well. And sometimes that mask on the face just helps to lower that inadvertent touching of the face that can occur.
Talking directly about Marion, I'm a resident of Marion, obviously, and Friday we had very nice weather here. It was very close to the first of the month, and the banks had long lines on Friday. Friday night around 7 o'clock, I saw a line wrapped around the Dairy Queen on Mansfield. We certainly have seen a decrease in traffic. Anybody who looks around can see that. Are we doing enough for what will be the surge, or do we need to continue to lower the number of people who are not distancing and not staying at home?
Yeah, there's always that balance between our need to be able to get out from being cooped up, if you will, in our homes. And I would say it is really important to hold that line as much as possible, to stay inside, and when out, maintaining appropriate social distancing. When I've been out in the community, for example, at the Kroger to get groceries, there are spots on the ground of where people to stand to maintain that 6-foot distance. So as people get out and move outside, being able to stay away from others in that distancing, being able to keep themselves from touching their face, being able to get home and wash their hands or have hand sanitizer with them when they're touching objects are really important pieces for us, and to just be mindful of that. At the hospital here, we constantly remind our associates as they work at the nurse's station or as they're walking through the halls to continue to work even among ourselves to maintain that 6-foot social distance. That constant reminder and being comfortable of how to give that feedback to a family member or a friend or someone that you see, hey, just want to remind you to maintain social distance, or I'm standing back here for social distancing, can really just keep it front of mind that when we do get out and travel, that's going to be one of those key parts for us to not continue to see this virus spread and to be able to help bend that curve so that we don't overwhelm the health system.
Dr. Gingrich, one of the parts of this, one of the components has been, I think, the unknown nature of how long this will be reality. The stay-at-home order is now in place through May the 1st here in Ohio. A lot of people are talking about how summer may not be summer. In your estimation, and again, nobody has a crystal ball at this point, but how long is it going to be that we are going to be dealing with the effects that people are still getting sick, the restaurants are not going to be open inside, the stores are not going to open back up, people are going to have to be at home? How long is this likely to go on?
I wish I knew that answer, and I'm hopeful that it's in just a few weeks to a couple of months. I see us hopefully being able to get back more towards normal slowly as we see those numbers decline and continue then to monitor and take a very staged approach as to what we can do. If I think about that, it's how do you move from a a very tight stay-at-home order to being able to move into slightly larger groups and then eventually getting back to the larger things that we normally like to do where we're in groups of, you know, 100 or more. I don't know that. I'm really looking and taking the advice of what Governor DeWine and Dr. Amy Acton have been suggesting. We are beginning in the hospital to begin planning, as many people have not come to the hospital for things that they used to come to the hospital for, of how do we get back to taking care of the community in that way again, with the assumption that we're a few weeks away from that. And but we'll have to continue to monitor that and see, as we blunt the curve or as we bend the curve, instead of having a peak very quickly, we spread that out a little bit. So it's not that always that less people will get infected, but it's that they get infected not all at once. And so we'll have to continue to monitor that as we go through these next 3 or 4 weeks here.
The 3 or 4 weeks, and that's exactly what we keep hearing. I know we want to be optimistic. We want to say the healthcare systems are not going to get overrun. But again, we've never faced anything like this. Do we feel, what is the confidence level we feel at Marion General Hospital, Ohio Health, that that is not going to happen based on what we know?
Yeah, I think that the 3 weeks of planning that we've had here have placed us on a secure footing of being optimistic that we can handle what appears to be where the surge is going to be, the influx of patients that we will see. I think the real question is how well we continue to maintain that stay-at-home component and lowering the spread of that infection rapidly. And we'll just need to continue to monitor. There's a lot of external factors that may impact that we're certainly considering and monitoring, and we have added additional layers, if you will, of surge capability that we're still in the planning for as we make sure we have the right staff and support, not just the beds for that. But I think that we feel confident in what we're seeing in the modeling. And then now we're still continuing to plan for anything and other contingencies if things should be worse. And so we'll need to continue to monitor that, but we're actively working on that on a daily basis.
Just so people understand and continue to do what they need to do and understand that this month, this three-week period, is going to be possibly the worst, what is the worst-case scenario locally? What would be the worst problem that we could face?
What we're looking and planning for is if we have a larger number of patients that need hospitalized care and also a group of patients who have non-COVID related issues at the same time, and how do we manage both of those conditions? So I think that for us, it's continuing to monitor on a daily basis. We have actually right now the team is going through their report out of the number of patients that we've seen, the number of patients that we have under investigation, what's going on from the state information, what are our resources looking like, what does our nursing staff and respiratory therapy staff and housekeeping staff all look like to be able to manage things both now and what we might anticipate in the next few days. And so we go through that on a big debrief every morning and then a smaller one in the afternoon just to make sure that we have the right piece. We're continuing to staff up nurses who normally work in one area of the hospital since we're not doing elective surgeries, for example, that those OR teams are now getting training to be able to care for patients in who need a higher level of care, like in the intensive care unit or in the emergency department, where their skills are being refreshed, if you will. And so we're continuing to do those things to get us ready. So I think it's that external piece of if things are a higher number coming in than what the modeling shows, or people who have put off managing their normal chronic medical conditions would have some type of an issue, and that would happen as well. It's how to manage all of that together. And so we're working on those contingency plans now.
We look at New York. We see that this is the epicenter in the United States of this right now. We look at Michigan, which is having their troubles right now, just to the north of us. Theoretically, could there be a chance that decisions would have to be made on who would get ventilators and who would not? We hope it doesn't happen, but is that possibly a thing that could happen?
I think that even in a normal time when you have patients who are on a ventilator, we have an ethics and compliance team that helps to look at issues that if physicians are seeing something, there's always discussions that occur with the families on status and progress and chance of recovery. And I think those are the pieces that we're looking at as well that would happen in our normal processes that occur. If we move into a situation where there would be no ventilators, we are looking at contingencies around that to see if that would be needed. But the one thing that we've done in Ohio that I'm confident has helped us is how quickly the state government acted to move us down a path of kind of compelling us to move into a social distancing status. And that in and of itself at this point seems to be significantly helping us not move down a path of being overwhelmed in that capacity. And so, you know, when you look at those numbers that are in the model, we have moved from a place where this peak was going to occur sometime in April, if I remember how Dr. Acton described this early, to now looking at kind of the end of April, beginning of May. We're finding ourselves buying time to really plan and pull things together in still a very rapid way, but doing it in a way that is helping us gain confidence, capacity, and logistic support to meet those needs. So we have some of those contingencies that we're working on. Every day I get more optimistic that we're not going to need those, but we'll be ready to have the right discussions in a way very similar to what we do in a normal environment if that need should arise.
Dr. Gingrich, in our final few minutes here, we see cancer, we see heart disease, we see stroke. Where is this in the medical community? What are we facing in April of 2020? COVID-19, coronavirus, however people refer to it. How big, bad, and unfortunate is this at this point medically?
I think that it is a shock to our system to see something come on as rapidly as this. This is something that none of us have experienced in our lifetime. We've had hints of it, if you will, around some of these other H1N1 and SARS and the swine flu. But this one has been something that is the word everyone uses is unprecedented. I always try to find another word, but that is really the piece I would say. So the speed with which this has happened, the impact it has had, not just to healthcare, but to just our lifestyle, the way we live as citizens of Ohio and of the United States, it's just really had a global impact that way, economically. So this is something that we're really, I think, in uncharted waters. The other conditions tend to have a very significant personal toll. And when someone's given a diagnosis of cancer, it's a very scary and anxiety-provoking situation that occurs for that individual, that family, the fear of the unknown. This is just some of that on a much more global, for our whole community. So I think it's unique and different. We don't know how that's going to turn out on the other side economically, how it's going to turn out. We are optimistic that managing the crisis, this time that we've bought, is going to help us. And really, as I look at the ingenuity of the citizens here in Marion, of our community, of our county, and of the state, I'm optimistic that we'll figure those other pieces out just like we have when you've had other times of global crisis, maybe not related to an infectious disease, but related to war or other issues. So I feel confident that we're going to weather this, but this is definitely something that has the attention. As we look in the media and see so many places sharing those heart-wrenching, devastating stories of individuals without the right equipment or people not being able to see their loved ones, the way we've had to work to kind of limit visitors into the hospital, those are heart-wrenching decisions to try to go through that in that time of uncertainty to not be able to have that connection. But we're able to use other techniques, use technology to help us, and we're going to get through this. And on the other side, we'll have newer ways in which we do things, both from healthcare and in our country, that I'm confident are going to help us advance through this and through this time of trial.
Before we part ways, during this pandemic, and you know we have not had last pandemic would have been 1918 with the flu. Being the chief operating officer of Ohio Health Marion General Hospital during what will be known as the 2020 pandemic, how many hours are you putting in? What keeps you awake at night? How are you dealing with this personally?
Yeah, thank you for asking. There's a lot of long hours. We're working on our own resiliency as well, knowing that there are probably longer hours to come. We have a rotation of on-site visibility for the teams and being here, being working from home, and then getting some days off. And so we're working on those schedules as well for us and all of our associates in the incident command team. The thing that really keeps me up at night is just making sure we're doing everything we can to keep our associates safe, making sure that we have, and then we can meet the needs of our community. I can just tell you the best part that's taking that burden away from our team who's working on this and from me is the fact that we've had 3 weeks to plan, and the amount of planning that's gone into those 3 weeks, I've watched us as an organization move from that anxiety to we're as ready as we can be, and we now have the pieces in place to adjust on the fly as needed if something external, some factor impacts us. And so we're continuing to coordinate, to monitor, and to do that. And so this helped me be able to sleep a lot better at night as I know that those pieces are in place to make sure that everyone who has moved into healthcare and our first responders have the right resources at this point and continuing to communicate well together to make sure we're meeting the needs in the community and keeping each other safe.
And Dr. Gingrich, just for a little reassurance before we part ways for people here in Marion, if you would get this right now, if you would get the diagnosis of COVID-19, you can be treated at Ohio Health Marion General Hospital and you can recover.
Yes, that is definitely the case. We have the resources and the physicians, the critical care capacity to take care of the community and take care of them here. And if we would have some really rare piece that we don't have here, we have the connections into tertiary care centers within our system to be able to get that care as well, which is going to be very unlikely, but we have that as well. So people can feel very confident that they can come here, get their care, and we have a whole set of resources to be able to help them, support them through that, and get them on the way to recovery.
Dr. Curtis Gingrich, Chief Operating Officer, Ohio Health Marion General Hospital. Thank you so much, Mr. Gingrich, and I hope we will stay in touch during this whole episode that we're in right now.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity, and look forward to talking again in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Gingrich.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Kurt Gingrich, there you go. There's the update from Marion General Hospital. We're coming back with somebody who has had COVID-19 and recovered, an Ohio person, Brian Zwanda, been in the hospital, diagnosed, the whole spiel right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get going and have a time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor.